Welcome to VBAC Birth Stories, a podcast where Australians share their journey to a vaginal birth after cesarean.
We are a safe haven for women to share their own VBAC journeys and through these personal experiences, educate and empower listeners.
I'm your host, Mel.
And I'm your host, Steph. And this is VBAC Birth Stories.
Hi everyone, welcome to today's episode where we chat to Michal, a midwife and mother to three boys who lives with her husband in Melbourne. Michal experienced three very different births. Her most recent birth was only 3 months ago during the current COVID-19 pandemic, where she was treated as a COVID-19 patient in labour due to her being ill at the time. Michal experienced a miscarriage before falling pregnant with her first son, Toby. Toby's birth was an emergency cesarean despite reaching full dilation, which although she desperately wanted to avoid, she knew it was the right decision immediately after her son was born. But there was no doubt in her mind that she wanted a VBAC for her next baby, and 2 years later she gave birth vaginally to her second son, Lonnie. Although a very fulfilling VBAC, there was something she wanted to do differently for her third labour, and she did. But little did she know that she would be giving birth to her baby Louis in such an unprecedented time. She tells us of how this pregnancy was riddled with anxiety, particularly towards the end when isolation and lockdown set in and she began to feel unwell on top of this. You'll also hear Michal's suggestions to women who are giving birth at this time, particularly for those in Victoria who are currently in lockdown. Michal's tenacity, pragmatic nature, and her concern for others is palpable. She recently created an Instagram account specifically to share her experience of pregnancy and postpartum in the hope that other mothers out there will connect and feel less isolated on their own journey. We'll pop her handle in the show notes for reference. Steph and I want to thank you, Michal, for sharing your journey with us, and we hope you all enjoy this episode of VBAC Birth Stories. Hi, Michal. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today to share your VBAC experiences. Could we please start by you just telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Mel and Steph. It's so nice to join you guys on this. So my name's Michal. I am a midwife and I'm a mum of three boys. We just had our most recent boy, Louis, 3 months ago. Before I was a midwife, I worked as a case manager for Department of Human Services and Disability Services for a year or two. And then I travelled for 6 months. My mum got really ill, so I came back to Melbourne. I was in hospital with her for most of the days when I came home, and it dawned on me that I really wanted to work in a hospital setting, but really wanted to work with women and children. I didn't want to be a nurse as such. Midwifery just stood out to me at that point in time. I had one more day to apply for it. So I signed all the forms, applied for that course and got in. So I did a direct entry midwifery at Monash, did that for 3 years, and then have been working in a public hospital since then, so since 2012.
You were a midwife before your boys were born?
Yes.
So how did that shape your, I guess, when you fell pregnant, how did that shape your mindset?
Yeah. So I actually had a miscarriage. I think I was lucky. I was well informed. I had set beliefs, but also knew that every pregnancy in every family is so different that you just can't predict everything. I'm lucky that I knew that it does occur to so many women. So I didn't feel alone and I didn't have that feeling of why me. I just thought this is, you know, we all go through it together. It was a miscarriage and we found it on the ultrasounds. And then after that, I was bleeding that night before I had to have a D&C. I guess I knew the amount of blood that was normal and not normal and how I should feel. So I was very prepared in that sense.
And when you went into Toby's pregnancy, how did that shape your pregnancy with him and what was his pregnancy like?
His pregnancy was great. I mean, luckily I've had wonderful pregnancies after that. I think I was holding on for that first ultrasound after that miscarriage, definitely with faith of breath, just waiting to hear and wanting such wonderful news. Yeah, I wasn't worried about falling pregnant, and luckily we fell pregnant soon after that. Going to Toby's pregnancy, I felt okay once I'd passed 12 weeks in particular.
Did you want to take us in to further along in Toby's pregnancy? How were you feeling towards the end of that pregnancy, and what led to your primary cesarean?
So Toby's pregnancy, I was working full-time as a midwife then, which was quite tiring, especially night duties were quite full-on. I did experience Braxton Hicks and tightening from early on, and around 26 weeks I would get them quite often, especially after a long shift. After the miscarriage, I did acupuncture a lot because I've got bad back anyway, like just general pains. I would have these massages like once a month, which was quite nice before a shift especially. I think that was the only time in life that I really did self-care during this pregnancy, which is quite nice.
It's very easy to do that when you don't have small children running around and tugging at you.
Yes. Yeah, and like fast forward now with the thin. When we got the due date for Toby, actually we got the due date of the 15th of April, and I said to my husband and to the doctor, I went private with Toby's pregnancy. I went to a doctor I'd worked with in the public sector, and she was remarkable, and she's an incredible obstetrician, and she was very much like a midwife in the sense of her presence, and she was very present with you, and she did my DNC with the miscarriage, and she held my hand through all of that, and she's just this wonderful human being. I said to them, he will be coming on the 12th of April, and she looked at me and she said, oh, but you know, we don't know. So I said, no, my friend passed away on the 12th of April when I was 16 and he was 17. And as soon as I got that due date, I said, no, he's coming on the 12th of April. So leading up to that date, she said to me 3 weeks before, she said, I'm going on a conference on the 11th, 12th and 13th of April. So I said, well, you'll miss this baby's birth.
Wow.
Yeah, and I wasn't worried about it. She had lots of women back up, except that weekend most of them were going on this conference as well. So it was a bit of a strange feeling thinking, oh, she wasn't going to be then. A lot of the others weren't as well. And a lot about me going private was I wanted someone who shared the values and beliefs of childbirth that I did as well. I didn't want it to be left in hands of people I wasn't aware of and didn't know. That we know that care is a big part to play in, you know, sometimes the outcomes or when you go into labour and all that. So to me, that was very important. So I was a bit concerned about that. But I had one of my midwifery friends who I love be a support person as well. So I was going to call her when I went to labour at home. She would come over. And she does a lot of home births now. So I knew that she knew her stuff, and especially if we're at home, she would know what to do. I wanted to stay at home as long as I could. I was doing acupuncture leading up to his birth, and when I saw the masseuse as well, he's this lovely man. I said to him, can you just do some induction massage, like just some points. So then the night before, on the 11th of April, we went for a walk by the beach as well, because I know water plays a big part in pregnancy and birth. So we went for a walk by the beach that night. We were having sex as well to try and bring on labour. And at 3 a.m. on the 12th of April, I wake up and I started contracting. So I knew it was the day. It was very early labour. I knew that. I was opening my bowels a lot as well that night. So I knew that things were on the go and moving. And it was around 7 o'clock that things started ramping up, 7 in the morning. That's when I woke up my partner. And that's when I started feeling like I needed my friend there as well. She came around 8. I had done calm birthing as well. One of the midwives from work does calm birthing lessons, and she offered to come to us and give us private lessons, the two of us, which was really lovely. So we did that, and I would listen to the calm birthing episodes, and I'd often drift off to sleep to that, which was nice and relaxing. My sister's a women's health physio, and she hires out TENS machines. Brad put that on. So I had those two tools to use at home. But when my friend came, she also had her Doppler and acupuncture needle. So she was doing a bit of that as well, which was really lovely. I'd walk around the garden. And at one point, I just found a really lovely, relaxing spot just to sit in bed and listening to calm birthing and having the TENS on. And that's when my waters broke. I think that was around 11 that day. That's when I decided to call the hospital just to let them know I was on air, because I know as a midwife, when someone comes in cracking labour and you haven't had time to get the history, you don't have time to read anything, you're just on the go. So I thought I'll just give them a little heads up. When I spoke to them, I said to them, listen, I'm a midwife, my waters just broke, but it's clear, slight pink, baby's moving, I've got no concerns, it's really I'm in labour, but it's not going too quickly, like I'm comfortable, I'll come in when I need. And they were a bit like, oh, well, actually, we'd like you to come in soon. So I said, no, I'm fine. I'm really, really fine. And I'm with this doctor and she would agree and I'm fine. And they said, oh, well, because you're not agreeing with what we're saying, we will have to write in your file that you aren't coming in when we're asking you to. So I said, that's fine. And we just stayed home a bit longer. My friend did an internal just to see how far along I was because I didn't want to go into hospital and be under 3 centimetres dilated because for me, then I knew then it would be a really long haul. I wanted to know I was in good active labour. So, and she had to listen to the heartbeat and I knew baby was moving and I was feeling safe and fine.
How many centimetres dilated were you when your friend checked?
I was 3 to 4. So we stayed home a bit longer, but it was also footy on that day. And I knew that when we wanted to leave, maybe I'd need to leave a bit earlier because it would take quite a while to get to the hospital because of the footy traffic. My contractions were a little bit incoordinate, so they weren't coming fast and strong each one and they weren't, you know, equally timed. So when we got into the hospital, I don't think they checked me straight away. I think they gave me a little while. They put me on the monitor just to get a good tracing, the initial tracing, that was fine. And it was my support person, my friend and my partner and myself just going in and out of the shower, putting the tens on when I was back in bed. And then I was doing involuntary pushing and I thought, oh, this is great. You know, maybe this is, you know, I'm going to have a quick labour and it's all going to be over soon. And, you know, just trying to read all the signs. And then it didn't feel like it was a very strong urge, so they decided that they'll do a check, and it was the covering that came in to do the internal. So it was another doctor. So the covering doctor for my doctor obviously had done too many hours, so she needs someone else to come and cover her. So yeah, they came and did the internal, and I was around 5 centimeters. And I thought, okay, I can do this. But the urge was very strong and I was going to different sideline positions with one leg up and just trying whatever we could to get that urge away, but I couldn't. I really couldn't stop it. And I'd watched many women in this stage and you always think, oh, you know, what does that feel like? Anyway, I felt it and I couldn't stop pushing. So I didn't want an epidural, we knew that. I tried the gas a few times, but I couldn't get that. I was still pushing quite hard with that gas. So we decided to try morphine, try pethidine. I suffer migraines, so I often had pethidine shots when they were available through the doctors, but now we can't do that. I would often get that. So I thought, oh, yeah, I'm used to this. My body's used to this. I'll be fine. It was good, but I didn't like it for me. I didn't like it in labour. I was on the bed, side lying, and we were trying to do, my midwife friend did a lot of like spinning baby sort of moves, like trying to, you know, have my leg up, one leg up or change the other position.
So, why were they trying to get you to stop pushing? You were feeling a great urge to push, but it was too early on in the labour.
Yeah, definitely. And I was only 5 centimetres and I was pushing already on that. So it wasn't like I was 8 centimetres and it was close. And I mean, we do know that things can progress quite quickly, but my contractions weren't very strong and they weren't, the whole picture didn't add up in that sense. And I did feel I couldn't stop that pushing. We did try for a little while, like we let my body do what it was telling me to do, but it wasn't changing. I decided I wanted to give myself that little bit of time, but I didn't want to have an epidural at that point and then things fizzle. And you know, I wanted to try and avoid that if I could. But the pethidine, I would drift off to sleep in between, and then it was almost like a rude awakening when the contraction came. I didn't have that. It wasn't like I was in a calm state and then the contraction came. I could get myself on top of it. So to me, that wasn't a nice feeling. They waited another 4 hours to do another internal, and the next 4 hours I was still the same, 5 centimetres dilated. Got to around 11 o'clock at night. They said to me, things haven't changed. By this point, we're thinking the augmenting labour, so starting with the hormone, the syntocin on drip, and perhaps an epidural because things would ramp up. And if I was still pushing on that cervix that hadn't changed in the last 4 hours, then that would possibly give my cervix that time to just open. And at that point, I agreed. I thought, yeah, we can do this. I want to give this my all to get to fully dilated and to have this baby vaginally. We got the epidural, I think that was around midnight by that time, and started the syntocin on drip and augmented my labour at that time. My friend left at that point because she knew that it was, you know, still a long haul. She'd been with us all day, the poor love. Then we just relaxed. We just spoke. We took a photo of ourselves, the last photo before Bub would arrive. No one came in until around 5 in the morning. The doctor came back with an internal and I was fully dilated. So I was very excited. We gave another hour for active descents just to let Bub come down. So I wasn't going to be pushing for too long. And then we started pushing. At this point, it was the midwife in the room and we're pushing and I was pushing my heart out. I'm like, yeah, I can do this. I've helped so many women at this point. So I was like just imagining all, you know, the energy from all those women with me and like, yeah, I can do this. Sitting as upright as I could at that point because I didn't want to be, you know, really back. And there was no change. Bub's head was not budging whatsoever. Then another internal was done and she said, this baby's not coming vaginally. And I cried. I said some silly stuff and thinking back, I'm like, oh my God, I sound like an absolute nutcase. But I was like, I'm a midwife, you know, I've been with so many women and helped them deliver their babies and watched them birth their babies and I can have a baby through my vagina. She's like, I don't think this baby is, but we could try a high rotational forceps in theatre. So I said, yes. She said, you do know the risks involved with that. And I said, yes. I said, I want to give it a try. And I was just in that really, I was stubborn at that point. So I was like, I just wanted to know that I've tried every avenue. I've given it my all. That was at that point, that was me trying every avenue. You know, looking back in hindsight, such a wonderful thing. You think of all the other things you could have done before that. But at that point, that was, you know, what I wanted to try. It's classed an emergency cesarean because it wasn't planned, but we went rushing. There was no baby's heart rate was wonderful.
In terms of his positioning, was he was still quite high? Was he transverse or anything like that?
No, so he was OP and his head was deflexed. So instead of being tucked chin to chest, he was
looking up.
Yeah. OP means that posterior, right? Like so, yeah, side up. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, and which explains everything with the labour. You know, it was you have that early urge to push and that's often with posterior babies and the incoordinate contractions and that's often posterior babies. Yeah. So there's, yeah, it has a lot of those. And I knew a lot of my in-laws kept saying during the pregnancy, you know, we've got big heads and they do. My partner has a big head and a lot of his family do. So I had that in my head as well, thinking, oh no, you know, it's not going to fit because it's got a big head. Yeah. So
did you have the hormones, the induction hormone, the syntocinon switched off at the time that you were pushing or was that still aiding
on,
you?
Still on, yes. That was on the whole time. I mean, sometimes you do turn it off, but for me, it was still needed at that time. Went down to theatre at that point and she tried a high rotational forceps. She didn't cut an episiotomy at that time because she was just seeing. I think she knew it wasn't going to work, but she was giving me that to know that we tried. So she tried that in theatre and then she looked at me and she said, no, this, I'm just moving the swelling of the head. I'm not able to turn your baby. So I said, okay, cried again. That was a bit of a big cry. And then because I'd been in so many cesareans, I knew, sounds horrible and I hope no one's offended by it, but there are certain smells in theatres that you are aware of. She said, I'm going to start your cesarean now. And I said, okay. And then as soon as she did, I said to my partner, I said, oh, they're doing this now and they're doing this. And, you know, I was explaining to him what was going on to me.
Did you find that was distracting you a little from what was going on to your body? Like that was a bit of a coping mechanism? You
probably, because sort of like... I'm a bit of a control freak in that sense. Like I'm involved because it's happening to me, but I needed to have that other involvement. But yeah, it definitely was a coping mechanism, I reckon. Yeah, and then he was born and they pulled him out. And as soon as I saw him, I knew that cesarean was warranted. And all my worries and my concerns about having a Caesar dissipated. I was like, yep. Okay, that was this baby's story. That was his birth. That is my birth as his mother, and that's okay. And I just loved him, and that was amazing. Like, literally, never thought about it again. Didn't worry about that. The story. So it was a good feeling, you know, just seeing that head, and I thought, okay, cool. Yeah, he was not coming out vaginally.
the shape of the head, is that what you meant?
The shape of the head. So his caput, the swelling of his head. I had actually never seen one that swollen.
What was the swelling caused by?
Just his position of trying to go down and the contractions, you know, pushing him down onto my cervix and into my pelvis, he gave it a really great try. My body gave it a really great try. And just from his position and his head shape, his head shape also definitely plays a part in it. He's got a large head, but it's also a different head shape.
Meeting him, were you able to have immediate skin-to-skin in theatre?
No. So that's one thing I do look back on and think I'm not upset. I'm just, you know, I wonder, could I have? And I didn't push for it. So I don't know why I didn't. I could have. I could have asked. But I think because of his head shape and things, they wanted to have another look at him. And so I thought, okay, that's fine. I'm happy. I knew he was fine. I wasn't worried. So it's a shame I didn't get that skin to skin, but we had it for a long time afterwards. So I literally, when any visitors came, I was top naked with him naked on me. Like, there was no clothes for him. We didn't get anything dirty for the first few days because we were just skin to skin.
Yeah. So lovely.
Yeah. So we were separated when, you know, they're stitching you, and then he went into recovery with my partner, and then luckily the midwife said to me, we'll see if there's a midwife that can stay with you in recovery so you can have breastfeeding in recovery. And luckily that they could accommodate that at that time, because as we know, that's not always a given depending on staffing.
Mikhail, I just wanted to take you back to that moment, the point where you were talking about making the call to have the forceps. Yep. And you sort of said at that point, now when I look back, there could have been other things. Were you referring to vacuum, or what were you sort of referring to?
No, so I mean more hindsight, as in like the earlier labour, or maybe not going into hospital when I did, or those sort of steps. Not sure. No. When he was, yeah, at that time, that was really the only thing we could do. Yeah, but earlier on, maybe. I don't know. Who knows? You know,
I suppose then going into your next birth, hospital advice was okay for a VBAC for future pregnancies? Was that discussed?
Yes. Well, as soon as I had that Caesar, I thought, I got to fully dilated, I'm doing a VBAC next time. That was just there was no question in my head about that. And then when I had a postnatal check with my doctor who I'd seen during the pregnancy, she said, you know, we can definitely try for a VBAC next time. So I said, yeah, definitely. That's how I went into my next pregnancy was, yeah, I'm having a VBAC.
Did anyone challenge that concept along the way in that pregnancy?
Yeah, definitely. I think to a lot of people, they were quite surprised. They would say, oh, when's your Caesar booked? And I'm like, oh, no, I don't have a Caesar booked. I'm going for a vaginal birth after Caesar. And especially when I fell pregnant with Lonnie, I went to my GP and I said, I need a referral. And I decided to go to someone else at this point. He said, oh, but there's this great obstetrician that I can refer you to. So I said, no, I'll be going. I really want to go to this one. And he said, oh, okay, but this one he's got a great Caesar, you know, like all that. And because he had a Caesar, you would be suggesting that you will be having another Caesar. That's what my GP said. And he's a lovely man, but I said, oh, no, that doesn't mean that. And because you've had a Caesar, you can actually have a vaginal birth. It just depends on why you had the Caesar in the first place. So I said, I will be going for a VBAC. So I think a lot of the time, that's the first point of call, is to get a referral to your care provider. And that may be that first time that a lot of people get a resistance to a VBAC. But, you know, I just brushed it off. I was like, yeah, no, I'll be going to this one. And so I decided to go to a doctor who has an amazing vaginal birth rate, who does VBACs a lot.
And you hadn't worked with this doctor before? It's just someone that you researched? Okay.
Yeah. Someone who is known, very well known for VBACs and vaginal births. So,
was it that you noticed that was different to the other doctors?
He's very much about normalizing the normal. You don't always hear. You hear a lot of medical terminology. I did go to another obstetrician before I went to him. Toby was 3.68 kilos, and she thought that perhaps that was a large baby for me. So in our first appointment, she said, I'll send you for a scan at 36 weeks in my subsequent pregnancies. And I said, oh, but why? And I know that scans aren't accurate, and especially a scan just done, a random one-off scan. And I knew that this baby would probably be the same size. And what would that mean? What would my plan then, how would that change? So for me, I wasn't comfortable with that because I knew that there was no need for me at that time to program that into the future. So I decided to go to him for that pregnancy. He did go through all the risks associated with feedback and associated with seizures as well, which I think is so important. A lot of people don't get the risks associated with seizures that can occur later on in subsequent pregnancy. So he gave me a 74% chance that I would have a VBAC. And for me, that's wonderful. I'm an average 70% person. Like, that's my test scores through high school. So I was like, perfect. Yeah, this is happening. I'm doing it. I'm 70% person. I'm having this VBAC.
So tell us, Mikhail, how did this pregnancy go? Did you do anything differently? You obviously, you had posterior baby with Toby. Was that playing on your mind?
So yeah, it definitely was on my mind during the later in pregnancy, because that's when it counts. I guess if I was sitting on the couch watching TV, I would make sure I wasn't sitting too back. I was sitting like forward and, you know, letting my tummy go between my legs, or being on a ball instead of just sitting on the couch. My hips sometimes play up. When I went on maternity leave and Toby was in childcare for 2 days during the week, I'd use those days to go get a massage, one, you know, just before my due date, and just to sort of help with my hips. I was on the go, I was active, and I don't think I did too much more.
Were you concerned about uterine rupture too much during your pregnancy? Or?
No, I was very aware of things that happen in life. I'm not someone that things happen and I go, oh, I didn't know that could happen, you know, in the world. But I was aware of it, but it didn't concern me. I mean, I chose to deliver in a hospital for those risks, that if anything did happen, there was a theatre available for me. That was my, you know, I needed that. But no, it didn't concern me greatly. I knew the risks, and I know that they're not as large as people make them out to be. I know that there is a larger risk for VBACs, but it's not that much more significant than a first time who hasn't had a seizure before. So no, it didn't concern me in those terms.
This doctor with this private obstetrician, did you have a plan that, like, similar to your last plan, which was to labour at home as much as possible?
Yeah, I did. I did want to do that if I could. He just said, you know, come in when your contractions are regular and strong. I did have lots of tightenings as well, again, for the few weeks leading up to delivery. And we just dropped Toby at childcare. It happened to be the day that he was at childcare, and I was having tightenings all that morning, but I hadn't told my partner, I hadn't told anyone. This could go on for a week. Don't want to jinx it. It'll be fine. And as my partner had only come to one appointment with me, the initial appointment when we met our obstetrician, and the rest I'd gone straight from work to appointments, so it was never he was never able to come with me. But this day he actually said to me, you know, should I come? And I said, oh no, don't worry, there's nothing's happening today, like, you don't need to come to this appointment. And then I thought, I'm being horrible, like, this is his baby too, of course you can come to this appointment if you like you can come if you want, but I'm just telling you there's no need in terms of nothing's happening, but of course you can come. So he decided to come, and they had a CTD monitor because it was on my due date. I was 40 weeks that day, and you could see the tightenings on the CTD, and I would look at it and just give a little smirk to the CTD machine. I'm like, oh yeah, I can feel that, that's good. And then I didn't mention anything about tightenings. I was still having them in the rooms. He said, oh, you know, you're 40 weeks, I can offer you a stretch and sleep if you want today. And I wasn't going to do it, but I thought, you know what, I actually want to know what my body's doing. So I did it. And he's like, oh, you're 3 to 4 centimetres and you're fully effaced. And I was like, my smile, I couldn't stop it. I was just like, yes, like, these tightenings are doing it. And I just smiled at him like, that's awesome, cool. And I didn't give off that I was having tightenings at that point. And he's like, oh, we'll see you in the next couple of days. You're going to labor in the next couple of days. I dropped my husband at work and still hadn't told him I was tightening at this point, and they're starting to ramp up a little bit. And after I dropped him at work, I called my sister and I said to her, I'm getting tightenings, but, you know, what should I do to pass the time? I know I need to mop the floor at home, and I need to pack Toby's bag, and I need to pack my bag. But you know what, maybe I should get a pedicure. And anyone who knows me knows I do not get my nails done. I go once a year to get a trim of my hair. Like, I literally, if I get my nail done, I break one as I walk out the door. I'm like, what's the point of that? So this is really not me. So I'm like, what do I need for a pedicure? So she's like, oh, you need thongs. I'm like, oh, that means I have to go home and get thongs, and I don't know where they are. She's like, oh, come to me, I'll give you some thongs. It's like, okay. So I drove to her place And I'm out the front and I'm like, you know what, I'll just come in. I need to go to the toilet. And as I'm there, they start ramping up. And I said, oh, I don't know if I can get a pedicure. And they're like, what if it ramps up even stronger and I'm in labor? Like, there. No, I can't do that. So after a while, I'm starting to really breathe through them. So I'm like, okay, this is starting. She's like, do you want me to call Brad? And I was like, oh, no, he's at work, it's fine. No, I still need to go home, mop and pack bags. She's like, do you want me to go to your house and mop for you and pack your bags for you? It's like, no, I need to do it. She's like, okay, so how about you go now? I was like, okay. So it's a 10-minute drive from her place to my place, and I had 4 strong contractions in that drive home. And I get home and I look at the floor and I'm like, there's no way I can mop. And the next contraction, I'm holding onto the walls and screaming. I'm a very loud labourer. I scream for contractions. It's just me.
Same. So, yeah.
I always thought I'd be this really calm, gentle, you know, I'd sway through them and I'll be fine. I wish. I've watched so many women doing that. And I'm like, oh, you guys are awesome. I want that to be me. But I couldn't. I screamed. So I called Brad, and he'd only been at work, an hour and a half at this time. And he's like, okay, I'm getting a taxi now. So I'm like, okay. And so then I called my mum, and she heard me scream through a contraction. And she's like, where's Brad? So I said, oh, he's on his way home now. I just called him and we hung up the phone. I tried putting on the TENS machine myself at this point and I couldn't do it. I don't know why, I just kept stumbling. So she called back 2 seconds later. She's like, do you want me to come over now just to be with you until Brad comes home? I'm like, yes, please, because I really need this TENS machine on. So she rushes over, she puts the TENS machine on. And at this time, I just needed comfort. So I lay on my side, like hugging my pillow while she put the TENS machine on me. At that point, she's like, do you think you should head in soon? So I'm like, no, I want to stay home as long as I can. She's like, okay. And Brad came home soon after that. And then when he was there, and they were both looking at each other like, I think we should go in. I was like, guys, you know, I want to stay home. And I got really, you know, no, I can do this. And then they started ramping up even stronger. And so we went in, yeah, around 3 to the hospital. Everything was fine. And I knew that the person who I'd chosen to see this time, he said, we don't need an IV cannula in you during labour. You know, if I really need it, I can put it in later. So I thought that was wonderful. And he said that the midwives know his plans for VBACs in labour. So they're all on board as well. So I was like, okay, that's amazing. I'll go back one more time. There's this midwife that works at that hospital who I used to work with at my hospital. And in my first pregnancy, she wasn't there for delivery. And I was always hoping she'd be there. And on the Sunday before I went into labour on the Monday, she actually messaged me. She said, I saw your name on the birthing list for this month. Are you pregnant again? So I said, yeah. And she said, well, I work on these 2 days. Have your baby on these days. I'm like, yes, I'm going to work on it. Anyway, it happened to be her shift. She was on. I walk into the birth suite and she greets me there. And I'm just like, this is amazing. This is the best.
It also helps. Like there's something about seeing that familiar face that just, it helps with your mindset in VBAC. Like I found that anyway.
No, definitely. Yeah, there's this comfort to it. And you're just like, oh, I can be who I need to be and they can, you know, help me through that. And that was just, and she knew I didn't want epidural. And even when the anaesthetist came in, because I was so loud, they walked in the room and looked like, you know, do you guys need epidural? And she just like shooed them away. She's like, no. And I was like, yes. Like I didn't need to vocalize that. So it was quite nice.
Mikhail, did your obstetrician recommend, as part of sort of a VBAC policy, continuous fetal monitoring? You mentioned that he said, okay, it's not necessary to have cannula, but what about continuous fetal monitoring, water birth?
Yeah.
The other things that normally, yeah.
This hospital doesn't do water births. I've always wanted one. I would really love one. But I was in the shower a lot. And I'd said to him, you know, I may want to deliver in the shower, like if that's where I am. And they were like, yeah, that's fine. He said, you know, the midwives can also deliver in the shower if he couldn't. So for me, it's all about midwives. And if I needed them to deliver me in the shower, that was amazing. I'm a midwife. Like, oh, that's my dream. And I was like, yeah, that's all I need. My reasoning to go to him was if I needed assistance, I knew he wouldn't do it unnecessarily. So continuous fetal monitoring, yes. I mean, I didn't question it. I just went along with it. I wasn't worried. They did have the telemetry one, so the one that you can walk around with and go in the shower with. So to me, it wasn't a hindrance. And whenever the midwife, I would hear the monitor and I'll be like, oh, yeah, it's loss of contact there. So I would just push it in. So it was a lot of Like I would hear it and I go, okay, yeah. And she would laugh at me. She's like, I can do that. Like you just focus on the contractions. So I found TENS and the shower amazing. So I was in the shower maybe an hour and a half, holding my partner's hand, you know, leaning over the chair in the shower. That was a really great position. And then when I got out of the shower, I just started, which is now transitions. I was just like, I can't do this. What if it goes down the same path as last time? I need to know, like, I don't think I can do that again. I don't want that to happen again. So it was playing on my mind in that sense at that transition period. And that's when she suggested, you know, just having a few huffs on the gas if I wanted, just to get me over that hurdle. And I couldn't let go of the gas. So it was my best friend. And so the gas and the TENS, it was like a hit from the front and then a hit from the back with the TENS. And I was like, yeah, I can do this. So that was amazing. And then we didn't do an internal. We didn't need to. Everything was progressing beautifully until this point. So then my doctor came and said, are you comfortable with hearing an internal? So I said, yeah, that's absolutely fine. I want to know for myself if I'm over that 5 centimeter hurdle. For me, that was that sticking point in my last delivery. So I needed that for my sanity at that point. And he said, yeah, you're 7 to 8 centimeters. So I was like, oh, this is amazing. At that point, he did suggest an ARM, so breaking the membranes, the waters. And at first I said, oh, but you don't need to intervene. Like, everything's progressing well. He did suggest at that point, he said, if we want the best chance at this point, he said, I would suggest it now. So I said, okay, yeah, let's go for it. I'm happy with it. And I was absolutely fine with that. So he broke my waters at that point. And then not long after, I had the urge to push. My first labor ended up being around 21 hours with Toby. You know, when you look back at everything of active, you know, after 3 to 4 centimeters, this bulb was 7 hours of active labor. So it was quite a nice change. And then when I had the real urge to push, they said, just wait until that urge, you know, like listen to your body, follow what your body's telling you. So I was kneeling on the bed, leaning over the top of the head. So I was upright, leaning over, using the gas and the TEN still. And then I started pushing and it was quite lovely. My partner, he got my phone and started videoing for me every push for me. And that was quite nice because then he would come to me at the end of the push and show me so I could really see my progress as well. Like I would feel down and feel for Bub's head. But it was quite a nice visualization. I was like, yes, I can see my baby's head, like this head on view as I'm pushing now, like that's big, that's happening. And it's funny because before my obstetrician said, yep, this baby's coming vaginally. I'm like, yeah, the words you want to hear.
Yes.
Oh. And it's quite nice. I still got those videos on my phone. I was actually watching them this morning just to get myself back in that time. Yeah, and hearing what they were saying as well at this time. And it was nice because sometimes when you're in labor and you guys can, when you're in anything in life, sometimes you forget what has said to you at that time and you think back and someone asks you a question, you're like, oh, I actually don't know. And sometimes you go in a bit of the defensive, you're like, oh no one asked me that, and I forgot a lot of things. And I was looking back, I'm like, oh no, he asked me, and you know, he talked about syntometrin, you know, can I give you third stage syntometrin, you know, to assist with placenta and bleeding. So I have all that and it's just quite nice to look back at that. And he spoke about, you know, warm compresses and, you know, just panting and listening to him when he says stop pushing, just to, you know, give yourself as much a chance to not tear so much. So I ended up pushing just over an hour, I think, with him. And there was a point I could feel that he wasn't budging. And I know that one of my legs is a bit shorter than the other by a few centimetres, you know, nothing crazy. I've got scoliosis on that. It's all lined. And then I just felt like, no, I need to cock my hip. And you can see in the video, I just move my hip a little bit and he's born. And I tear at that point because I just, like, you know, released. I just knew that my body just needed that little slight adjustment and he was born. So I ended up getting a second degree because I did that, but he was born vaginally, so to me that was a big win. That was at 6:50 that evening, so he was born that night, and he ended up being 3.8 kilos, so a bit bigger, but his head shape was definitely different.
Ah, I was going to ask you, how was his position? Did you know his position before going into labour, or how did he?
No, and I never really fixated on that because I know that it can move and they can change and they can be one position 1 second and literally a second later they can move. So to me, I never fixated on that. I did worry that he just for some reason. Who knows? I worried that maybe it was my pelvis that my first was in that position. But when things were progressing so well, I didn't worry about that.
And he wasn't posterior this time?
No, he wasn't.
How did you feel? Yeah.
Oh, it was amazing. I think I was a bit of a blubbering mess, you know, a bit of, just amazed that it happened and that he was there. He was a little bit stunned at that time. So I got into my midwife brain and I was like rubbing him. I'm like, you can do it. Come on. And then I didn't want any of that separation. So as soon as he started crying, I was like, okay, good. Yeah, he's staying. And yeah, we just stayed skin to skin then straight away, you know, placenta was delivered, no fuss, and then had my secondary sutured and then just stayed in bed for a little while. And it was quite nice because then my mum and my sister and her 4-month-old daughter came in before I even got up for a shower. So it was quite nice to be able to share that intimate time with them.
Do you want to take us through to Louis's birth and pregnancy and birth? Because, you know, he's just a little baby, but his story is very relevant to, I suppose, what's happening at the moment.
It is.
Around the world. Yeah.
So Louis is 3 months old. So exactly a year ago today, we went on a holiday to Bali with some friends, and we were always talking about the third baby, and I wasn't using contraception because I knew that at some point we were going to want another child. And we were in Bali and we had sex and then I realized soon after we did that I started having severe ovulation pain. Literally 2 days after that, I was nauseous every day, and I'm like, oh no, I'm in my head. I kept thinking I've got Bali belly. Anyway, we get back and I was nauseous still, and I'm like, oh, it's probably because I'm having withdrawals from all the cocktails, the great cocktails. I only had like one or two a day. Like, I wasn't an extreme alcoholic there. That probably does sound extreme, but I wasn't so bad. And then after like 2 weeks, I'm like, no, I think I should do a test, I reckon. And we were pregnant, and so fortunate that it happened that way. Like, I'm very lucky, and I know how lucky I am that did just happen that way. Anyway, I had fears because I'd had vaccines before I went to Bali, and some of them, it said not to fall pregnant straight away. So I always had that in the back of my head going, oh God, you know, what have I done? And Zika virus, and lots of mosquitoes love me. So I was bitten quite a lot. So I kept thinking about that. So I had those worries at the beginning of pregnancy. And I also had, my dad had prostate cancer and he was going through radiation at that time. So I had taken him a few times to radiation. So I was a bit worried about also that exposure. Not that when you're in the waiting room, there's no exposure there. So there was all these things playing on my mind. And then I had some blood tests done, and I had cytomegalovirus, so it's CMV, which is a blood test that you do in pregnancy to see if you have it. So luckily I'd had it previously, so it wasn't like I was exposed at that time in pregnancy. So that is better, and it gives you a bit more of a less worry. That all calmed down and I was feeling fine about it, especially after the 20-week scan. There was only one time during pregnancy I had reduced movements, and I think it was just from a lot of stress that I wasn't really noticing the movement. So I had a CTG done once during the pregnancy and everything was fine after that. And then we were renovating, so we moved out to my parents and we were living with them for a little while. Then during this time, Lonnie was still sleeping in our bed, and Toby has never been a great sleeper. So we had a sleep study booked in for Toby on the 10th of March, just started maternity leave the day before. And then during that night, when the sleep study, I'm getting all these messages from the school that there's a COVID case at the school and the school will be closed the following day, and that we all have to start sort of self-isolating in those terms because it's around our area. So I started getting quite worried. So we started isolating on the 11th of March, and then there was all the, oh God, what is happening to the world? We're isolating. I knew that, yes, there weren't many cases with pregnant women and babies, but this is a very new disease. So I kept thinking, no one knows everything and no one can pretend that they know everything. And so we're just going to isolate as much as we can so that we feel like we're safe for us at that point. But it was a very, very worrisome time, especially when all the policies were coming out about visitors at the hospital and who could come and what you had to do and if you couldn't come. And then there was the worry of who would look after our boys when we went into labour, because the plan would always be my parents. They're incredibly capable people and look after my kids and my nieces and nephews. You know, they're big, they play big parts in their lives, but, you know, they're over 70, and with all the health issues, I was concerned about Corona with them. So luckily we were isolating with them, so I felt that if it happened during that time, there's no worries, we're not going to expose them to anything. But then it went into lockdown, so it just heightened my anxieties. Brad never came with me to appointments, but just that thought that he couldn't come, there was that, you know, just that, there was an added roadblock, I guess you could say. And then it was worrisome when you'd go to your appointments and there would be couples there, and you were thinking, oh, they, you know, they'd suggested not bringing your partner. And then you were thinking, you know, I'm being exposed to their partner as well. It's not just about, you know, so that was always playing in my mind. But then you're always like, but they obviously need their partner there for that visit. So, you know, you're trying to acknowledge their needs as well, but then you're also scared. You're like, you know, I'm exposing myself when I come to these appointments. And then when I go home to my parents, I'm exposing them. So it was always a bit of a concern. And then we decided to cut our renovation short so that we could move back into our house before we have the baby. So we moved back home, which was a big thing as well, that was during isolations. I was trying not to get into my head about, you know, when I was due. And with Toby, I knew the day he was going to be born, even though he got stuck, so he was born the following morning but went to labour on that date. Yeah. With Lonnie, I knew I was going to have a VDAC, like it was happening. I didn't know what date he was coming, but I knew it was happening and I didn't get concerned. And then with this baby, I always had in my thought that he was going to be born early. So I did start experiencing a lot of period-like pains, early tightenings for a month before he was born, and it stopped. I often, you know, I think the anxiety did play a part in that. I wasn't ready emotionally as well at that time because of everything that was going on in the world. And there were a lot of appointments I'd go to, and there were a few midwives that worked with him, and they would come in and talk to me, and I would just like burst into tears, and I was just crying for a full day just because your anxiety is so high as it is at the end of pregnancy. And then to do it in this time. And a few times my blood pressure was quite high, but that was because I was crying so much and quite worked up. And then Toby was turning 5, and I kept thinking, okay, let's get through Toby's birthday so that we can give him the celebration, you know, in isolation that he deserves. We got through that and that was all fine. And after that, I was like, okay, yeah, the baby can come whenever.
Did you ever at this time fear that you might give birth alone because of everything that was going on, or was that never something that entered your mind?
No, I definitely felt that. Brad had been to New Zealand just before isolation for work. It was within that 2 weeks he got sick, and I sent him for a test. I said, you need to have a test now, because if I go into labour tomorrow and we don't know your results, they won't let you into the hospital. And I said, I just need to know that we've tested you, and whatever the test is, we'll deal with it. And if I go into labour and you're negative, we can go in together. So he got tested at one time. Both my parents got tested like multiple times during that time because I was so worried. But then I got really sick as well. A week and a half before I went to labour, I was actually really sick. I was coughing horrendously. My ears were sore. My throat was raging. I had a really bad headache all the time. And I'd said to my obstetrician, I called him at home, and he called me back. He's like, I'm just doing the gardening. Is everything all right? And I said, oh, I'm sick. You know, should I go get tested? Because do you guys, like, what am I going to do? And he's like, no, you can't get tested, because at that time the testing wasn't for everyone. It was only if you'd been away or been in contact. Yeah. Or so it's like they won't test you anyway. So just you come in and they'll treat you as a potential corona case.
It's been really stressful, I suppose, at the end of your pregnancy. Did you have any thoughts like, if I do have this, will I be passing it on to my newborn, or did you have any of those thoughts?
I did, definitely. And I think a lot of it that helped me through it was, so I started that like Instagram page just as a little thing, just if there were other people going through it that we could, you know, compare and go through it together, because it is such an isolating time. And especially going through isolation during that isolating time was quite, you know, you're very much, you know, in your thoughts about it. And you try not to be, you're trying to push it off and just try and normalize everything, but you can't normalize something that's never occurred before. So And I was really worried, but I was kept reading the RANSCOG guidelines that were coming out and the Australian Breastfeeding Association, and just reading, you know, and knowing that I had all that information, that if I went, my worry was going into hospital, one, my partner not being able to be in there because he was sick, two, me being sick, and then them thinking that I have it, and then taking bub to be separated in case they were worried the baby was going to get it or not let me breastfeed. But I knew that from the knowledge we have from it going through a lot of the other countries, that they said that mothers shouldn't be separated from their babies, and that you could still breastfeed, and just extra precaution with hand washing and general guidelines about that. So I kept, you know, trying to have as much knowledge as I could, but I was worried that I would have it and then be treated as the case. So then on this Thursday, I did like a little frog move on the floor, you know, when you've got your legs apart and you sort of lay down on the ground as much as you can with a 39 week belly. And I'm laying down, and it must have been around 3:45, I heard and felt this pop, and I was like, what is that? I think my waters may have broken, but I'm not feeling any fluids, so maybe not, but I don't know what that was. I'll just go to the toilet. And there was like nothing. There was like a tiny like pinprick of pink, and I thought, oh, that mustn't be it. And then while I'm on the toilet, I get my first contraction, and I think, okay, that was interesting. That wasn't like a little one. That was a decent contraction. Within a minute, I get another one. I'm like, okay, all right. Okay, this might be happening. So it's around 4 o'clock, and it was my niece's birthday that day. She was having a Zoom birthday party with the cake at 4 o'clock. And so I messaged my sister and I said, we're going to try, but we may not make it. Just keep on the down low. Anyway, going to the bed, into the bathroom, and I hadn't put on makeup in ages, and I just put a bit of concealer and a bit of bronzer on. I don't wear much. And Brad's like, why are you putting makeup on? I said, oh, for the Zoom, the birthday. Like, I don't want to look like a ghost on Zoom. And he's like, you're not going to make it onto the Zoom. And I said, yes, I will. Like, I can just leave the room if I'm having a contraction. Like, it's fine. Then they started really coming strong. So that was after 4. And by around 4:15, my sister calls me, and I am in the throes of labour. And she's like, oh my gosh. I'm like, yeah, sorry, we can't come to her Zoom. And she's like, that's okay. She's like, is there anything you need? She's like, I know I can't be there. You know, it was like that real separation. She's like, but if you know, you just call me on the phone if you just want to talk. I can just be on the phone if you just need someone on the phone. She's like, okay, thanks. But, you know, I've got my TENS on, I'm going to do it. So I got Brad to put my TENS on then. And I call my parents and I said, I'm in labour. We're going to have to drop the kids soon. Is that okay? And they're like, yes, absolutely. We can come get them. I'm like, no, we'll drop them on the way to the hospital. It's fine. Absolutely fine. And then I get a contraction. They're like, leave, like, drop them now. So I said, no, it's fine. We'll bath them. And they're like, we can do that. And I said, no, you can do it. But, you know, we it's fine. Anyway, so then I called the labour ward and I said, I'm in labour. And then straight away I got a contraction. She said, how far away are you? I said, oh, you know, I said, where we live. And she said, do you think you can make your way in? And I was like, oh, I must really be like sounding in good throes of labour, because, and I was like, yeah, my husband's just bathing the kids now, and then we're going to drop them with my parents. She's like, okay, maybe get them out of the bath. And I was like, okay. And I said, and I just want you to know, I said, I'm really sick at the moment. I'm coughing, and I was coughing at that time. I always knew I'd go into labour in the height of the sickness, because why not? And she's like, okay, but just so you know, when you come, you'll have to wear a mask, and we'll be treating you as a potential corona case. I said, okay, I understand that. And I had the TENS on. I was, you know, trying to sit as far back as I can and push my head into the car seat. And we drop it, the kids at my parents, and Brad gets out to take the kids out of the car and to get their bags. And my mum's like, don't, just go. Like, I can get them out. I can. And she's looking at me. She's like, just go. And so we get to the hospital at 5:10, when we've met downstairs at the front, and she had a wheelchair for me, the midwife, and she had our mask, and she was in full PPE. And she said, okay, here's a mask. You're going to have to leave this on the whole time someone's in the room with you. And she gave one to Brad and said, the same for you, and let's go. So she wheeled me upstairs. We got in the room. We didn't go in the birth suite, so they made a room outside of birth suite that would be for potential corona cases. Then I get on the bed. I'm lying on my right side and I just couldn't move. She did a VE. I think she was just with my history. She just wanted to know what was going on because I couldn't verbalize what was happening. She's like, are you pushing? I'm like, I don't know. And I was just screaming and it was just happening too fast. Anyway, she did a VE and I was 8 centimeters. And as we know, with multis, if you had a baby before, it doesn't matter what the VE says, you can deliver within that next second. She's like, okay, you're doing wonderfully. There wasn't time to put on a monitor. We put it on my tummy, but there was no way we were going to get any reading whatsoever. And she said, you want to change positions? And I said, I can't move. It was just too fast. It was happening. Started pushing soon after that. And then within us being at the hospital, we arrived at 5:10. He was born at 5:34. So in a very quick labor. And yeah, straight to me. Because with Corona, there was this new thing that wipes the mum's chest before the baby goes on to you and just put on the towel because they don't know. And, you know, they're working on what's going on everywhere else. So that's what we did. My obstetrician didn't make it because it happened too quickly. So it was perfect. The two midwives there who are absolutely beautiful people. And it was quite nice because I was their first Corona case. They were, you know, unsure what to do in that sense. So there was that worry. I'm not fazed as what they needed to do. I was willing to work with them. We were a team in that room, you know, going through such an unknown event in the world. We were just trying to keep it really relaxed in the room as much as we could. We later heard that outside of the room, it was a big different scenario going on. And so infection control stayed late that day at the hospital to work out what to do with me. They did say to us that we couldn't leave the room. So if Brad needed to leave, he wasn't going to be able to come back in the hospital. So because I was sick, we couldn't move to another room. So we'll be staying in that room until my results came back. So they did a swab as soon as I delivered and we weren't going to find out for 24 hours the results. So they would treat me as a Corona case until then. Yeah, but he came really quickly. I had a small tear. My obstetrician came in soon after he was delivered. Everything was fine with the placenta. He did have to go to the resuscitator for a second. Had my midwife brain on me. I was trying to, you know, he was so stunned. It happened so quickly. He also had the cord around his neck and his shoulder, but that was actually fine. You know, she just looped that around his head as he was being born. It wasn't too tight, so it was all fine. But when he came to my chest, you know, she didn't clamp straight away, but then when he wasn't really making much noise or coming too quickly, she'd just say, we do need to take him just quickly. And I said, yeah, that's absolutely fine. So cut the cord again. And he was crying as soon as he got to the resuscitator. He just was screaming. And I was fine. Like, I knew he was just stunned. It was so quick. I was stunned. It was just a shock.
Quick labor. Did you have to wear the mask during the pushing phase and everything? And how was that?
Yeah, I did. I'm lucky it was quick. I did worry about that, especially when I went to vomit, because often with quick labours as well, you do sometimes vomit with those because your body's just going through this, you know, quick thing. But as soon as I went to vomit, I went, no, don't do that because you're wearing a mask. Like, that would just be horrible. But luckily I didn't. It was hard wearing it even after delivery because you're so, you know, I've worn a mask at work and I'm not against wearing masks. You know, I don't want what I'm saying to be, but it was constrictive at that time.
It's practically so difficult, yeah, and quite warm. And I guess when you're sort of exerting yourself, it would be difficult because the air is not escaping that area around your nose and mouth. But I was just going to say, did you feel that perhaps mentally you were holding back or trying to keep as much of your labour at home as possible because you anticipated some of this unknown? Or
definitely I was worried about that. At one point I had to think, you know, could I do this at home? And but, you know, I don't have the supports for that, so I didn't think about that too much. But then I guess as it was happening, I just went with it. And it was happening so fast that I couldn't think too much about it at that time. And I wrote this down, you know, when I wrote a little thing on the photo I put up on Instagram, was just that, you know, we're all going through this unknown together and we're all learning how to get through it together. And that goes for care providers and support people and the people utilising that support. So, you know, we need to speak about it to each other so that we know that we're all feeling this uneasiness. And as long as we can word that, I think we're not going to have so much, you know, we're not going to be felt with resistance. So I think it was so important that I just said, yeah, okay, yeah, no, that's fine. And if we can't leave the room, we can't leave the room. And if Brad had to leave, he had to leave. It was more leading up to it that the anxieties did play a big part in it. So I had booked in a birth photographer for this delivery because I kept looking at all these beautiful birth photos and I was like, I want that. To me, that was just like, I romanticized this. So I was like, oh, this is going to be beautiful. So I had a birth photographer booked and half paid for. And we did a pregnancy shoot. So at least we did that. But then because of the isolation during Corona, we weren't allowed to have her be present. So that was a big shame for me. But then when I was pushing, I screamed at my husband. I'm like, quickly get my phone, take a video.
Did you do any video calls with your sons while you were in hospital? And your parents? Yeah.
Yeah, we did. And keep in mind, my parents are of a different generation. So doing FaceTime was very much with their face. And so you look back at the photos, and I took photos of everyone we FaceTime and introduced over FaceTime. I thought that would be a nice little snapshot of all the people that he met, because that's how he's meeting all people these days. But my regret is I didn't ask them to take a photo, because my photo I take has them as the big picture and then Louis as the tiny picture, and you can't see it when you print it. So make sure you get them to take a snapshot. So he's that big picture and they're the small picture too. Yeah, so they were very excited and it was so cute. So Toby, I was huffing and puffing away. Obviously, they saw me in labour and I was so happy that they did, because I always speak to them. As a midwife, I'm very open about what happens and I show them photos and, you know, we talk about how babies are born. And Toby knows that he was a Caesar, so he's seen my scar, and Lonnie knows that he was born from my vagina. But when we got in the car, Lonnie was like smiling and giggling at me, and Toby said, "Don't laugh at her, she's in pain, are you okay?" And he was quite concerned. And then when we dropped him at my parents, he looked at me and he goes, "I hope they take care of you. I hope you'll be okay." And I said, "I will, darling."
That's so sweet.
But it was quite nice for them to see that connection. And we read books about, you know, when siblings come meet you at the hospital. So it was quite sad that we weren't going to have that meeting of the brothers, but it made no difference in the scheme of things. Yeah, it was nice to be able to. It was just us then in the birthing room, and we stayed there for 24 hours until I got the all clear that I was negative, even though we all sort of knew it, but you obviously have to be cautious. One thing about this labour, I did say at one of my last appointments, I'd just been speaking to my friend, who was actually my friend with me in my first labour. She happened to call me in my final weeks of pregnancy, and I said to her, "You know, I actually haven't really thought much about this labour, I think there's so much going on." And she said, "Well, what do you want?" And I was, for a big thing for me was after my last delivery, after my first VBAC, I wanted to really feel like I rocked this birth, that I was so present and just breathing that baby out this time. And I hadn't vocalised that. And so when I went to one of my last appointments with my obstetrician, I said, "You know, after my last delivery, I... you know, there were just some things I was thinking about and some things I really want for this." And he's like, "You're not going to tell me you want a Caesar." And I was like, "No." And he goes, "Oh, good." He's like, "Oh my gosh." And I said, "No, I really want to feel present in that pushing stage. I think with the gas in my last delivery, I loved it. Like that really got me through it. But I think I loved it too much at the end." And it's almost like there's a, you suck it in, and then when someone talks to you, there's a moment lapse, like you're not really in real time with gas. Like it's almost like 2 seconds later, you're like, "Oh, yeah." So to me, I really wanted to feel present this time and to be present in the pushing and to really have control over that pushing stage. So he's like, "Okay, yeah, not a problem." Anyway, when I was there in the delivery, and I think because it happened so quickly, I wasn't really present in my body as soon as I arrived at the hospital. And one of the midwives afterwards, she said to me, "I know," and I've said this to women before, and as soon as she said it to me, I was like, "Yeah, okay, I get you." She said, "This is happening fast, and therefore it is overwhelming in that sense, and the pain is so strong, but you're doing it. Your baby's about to come. You're going to be pushing this baby out soon. So I really want you to focus." And I was like, "Oh, that's just what I needed to hear, to get myself in that room, in that moment, to birth my baby and really be in my body about it, and not be almost like an out-of-body experience looking down and thinking and watching someone give birth. Like I really needed to feel really present." So that was amazing. And as soon as I could give myself the reason behind the pain I was feeling and the contractions and that, and you know, he was almost crowning at that time, and then I could put my hand down and feel his head crowning, I was able to really like close that loop, like feel his head and almost like close, have that circle loop in my body, like feel it physically and emotionally. And then I was able to really give it my all and birth my baby wholly. So that was, it was quite amazing. In a very strange time, it was a very nice moment.
It sounded like it was fast and furious, but it was really fulfilling for you in that added dimension that you were talking yes. about. So different again to your second birth in that sense, would you say?
Very different. Yeah.
First VBAC was fulfilling in that, yes, I'm doing this vaginally, it's happening.
Yeah.
And then your second VBAC was that next level, I suppose, of body-mind connectedness that you were feeling between the birth and all of that.
Yes. And I'm lucky it happened so quickly now, because I think if it had gone on too long, then I would have gone in my head more about all the worries about what was going on around us and would have focused on what I couldn't have rather than what I was doing. You know, I wouldn't have been able to use the TENS because I was considered a corona case. Some hospitals are not able to use it due to filters that they use. So it's not all hospitals, and anyone listening to this who's pregnant and going to experience birthing in this climate, every hospital is different. So I don't want anyone to worry about what I'm saying, because that is the scenario that I was in. Make sure you call up your hospital to see what their policy is.
And how did you feel in that postpartum period?
Unfortunately, my cold stayed for a while, which wasn't fun, coughing, especially after delivering. But actually, my perineum felt okay the first day. It was sore. Very different to my birth with Lonnie. With my birth with Lonnie, I felt my pain was worse than my Caesar pain. I also had a bad cold after delivery. I got sick that night. So after Lonnie, it took a while to feel great. I have to say, after Lonnie, straight away the pain was greater, but I recovered quicker than I recovered from my Caesar. So it was a very different recovery. So all three completely different birth stories and recoveries as well. But this recovery was great, really quick. Although the downsides that we couldn't have people visit us in our house, and that was quite isolating, and you know, having family outside out the window was just so strange and so sad that they couldn't hold him. But on the flip side, we went rushing around, you know, we were staying home. I got mastitis after Toby and Lonnie quite a few times, but after Louis, I didn't get it at all. And maybe that was because I stayed put and I fed through the feeds. I didn't stop the feeds to have to rush somewhere, or on maternal child health nurse or all over the phone, which was nice. They were nice visits in that sense. You know, I've been through the postnatal period before, so at least I knew for myself what I needed.
Really. Were there any alternative forms of support that you were able to seek? I mean, you spoke there about having phone sessions with the maternal health nurse and things like that, but I guess any advice for women out there who are going to go through this postpartum?
A lot of places are doing just the phone consult or video consult. There are a lot of midwifery clinics in the community as well. I know that they would definitely be open to supports, especially if you're still pregnant. Contact them now and have that history with them. There's definitely lactation consultants, and some are still doing home visits, women's health physios for pelvic floor, but also for mastitis. I know my sister helped a lot with when I had mastitis. There are postnatal doulas that could also help. But it just depends. They're all different, as to some are doing home visits and some aren't. I know in my previous postnatal periods, I'm someone that can do things. I don't ask for help a lot. But if someone's offering to get something for you, take them up on it. People want to help. Know that the supports are really out there, that you can get them, and health professionals want to give you the care that you need now. So they don't want you shying away and not coming for something. And some are getting quite concerned that some people don't want to come in for their general checks, when it's so important to still utilise that support. If you need the help, you can still get it. I think that's a big message that we can portray at this time. Do Zoom dinner dates with friends. You can be feeding baby and you know, like I'm speaking to you guys, you need a little bit of adult interaction sometimes too, just not about your delivery. My other suggestion is take lots of photos while you're in delivery suite, if you're happy to, as baby's being born, if you're happy to, and definitely after baby's being born, so that it's such a whirlwind. And especially now, you don't have the visitors to come in to debrief about your birth experience straight away. So you're missing out on that experience of sharing your birth experience. And thank you guys for letting me share it, because it's a nice way of being able to talk through it. But because you don't have that now, make sure you take lots of photos. You can send them to friends and family if you want to. But also when you're feeding late at night, you can look back at those photos and know you really lived it. That was your birth experience. You birthed in a pandemic, but you did it.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. That's just so many great tips there.
Particularly, I think, for women at the moment in Victoria, even though you might be isolated, as Mikhail was saying, you're definitely not alone. To use other methods of connecting there. And thank you so much for sharing that all with us. And I know everyone out there will take a lot away from that, particularly those who are birthing at the moment and pregnant at the moment. So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And thank you guys. I love listening to your podcast. Thank you for having me on this. I love it. I love empowering women and giving people a little bit more perspective and knowledge.
Thank you for listening to this VBAC story. If you like the show, please subscribe and feel free to leave a review. If you would like to connect with us on social media, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search for VBAC Birth Stories. If you have a question or you'd like to express interest in sharing your personal story, email us at vbacbirthstories@gmail.com. VBAC Birth Stories is a podcast where we share women's lived experiences. Please be advised that it's not intended to replace medical advice. If you have any concerns at all during your pregnancy, please always speak to your healthcare provider.